Welcome to the latest edition of Time to Lead, the Chief Energy Officer podcast, a space for inspiration, reflection, and dialogue about conscious leadership. Together with leaders committed to leading from and with humanity, we explore what it means, moment to moment, to lead with purpose, care, and connection in a time that calls for nothing less. And as I was thinking about who simply couldn't be missing from this series, it became clear it wouldn't feel whole with today's guest, Dustin Seal. Now, titles merely define the outer form of our work and some of our responsibilities, some of the places where we give our energy, but of course, we are infinitely more than that. So that said, Dustin leads the European consulting practice of Heidrick & Struggles and co-authored Lead Through Anything with his longtime friend, Ed Manfrey, a book about making this a world better led, guided by purpose, vitality, and agility. And well, Dustin, I think for 30 years or so, you've worked with CEOs, CHROs, and executive teams and many other people across the globe, I'd say, aligning energy, mindset, behavior to drive strategy and nurture healthy organization and cultures. A long time, Dustin was my boss, but more importantly, he's a friend, a partner, a mentor, a fellow traveler on this path of loving human leadership. So today, frankly, is a beautiful excuse to reconnect with someone who continues to be a gift in my life and with whom I share this deep interest in the inner life of leadership. So welcome, Dustin.
Thank you.
Dustin, when I reached out and said, hey, would you be willing to record a podcast together? You didn't hesitate and say, yeah, sure, no problem, let's do that. And yet it was a choice, although it was instantaneous. What did you say yes to by being here?
There's probably three things. One is yes to you. You know, for years we've been on this journey together, and we spend time together outside of podcasts exploring what we're seeing and experiencing in leadership and in organizations, culture, the impact. So just an opportunity to have a chat with you, as we do outside of the podcast. Second is that, you know, I think you mentioned it earlier. I don't think there's been a time, at least in my whole life, where a positive and impactful leadership is needed more. When I look at the zeitgeist of leadership in the world, right now, this is a time for leadership, and it's a different time. I don't think we can hope our way out of some of the challenges we face, but I do think we can lead our way out together. So those are the two primary reasons. And then the third is, why not? It's fun. That's basically might be how I approach a lot of life, which is, why not? That's probably the third reason.
Well, that opens a large space for three podcasts.
Right.
and let me just build on this. I often read your posts on LinkedIn, and in a recent one, you reflected on how love plays into leadership and its impact. And you quoted Rumi, and you said, wherever you are and whatever you are, be in love. Now, some listeners might say, well, business is probably the last place to look for love. Or if you do, you're probably being a little bit naive. So in your own experience, what becomes possible in a team when a leader shifts from fear to love, even subtly? How does that show?
So, just again, a couple of things. One is I reflect on Rumi several times a week, and I would suggest that to any leader, just to go in online, you can just type in Rumi quotes or Rumi writings. The depth of his insight is spectacular. And it just takes you in a different direction every time. Even the same quote can take you to different places. So that's something a gift a client of mine gave me, who quoted Rumi, and I said, that's amazing. I said, who is that? We talked about it. It's just become a practice. But where the post came from, and I've had similar posts, I think you know, came from one of the most lovely men I've ever known in my life, a mentor of mine, John Clayton. And he was helping me navigate the world, consulting, feeling like an imposter in the C-suite, because I was in my early mid-20s when I was doing this. And he shared with me, you know, Dustin, we are always in one of two states. We're either in a state of love or we're in a state of fear. So that's been a lifelong reflection for me, because when I first heard it, I thought, well, can it be that simple? Now, fear has a lot of faces, and, you know, can be from anger to resentment to depression. There's a lot of different ways fear shows up, impatience. Same with love. So in the post, it's not romantic love, which is a love. It's more the deeper love, the one that sits within the center of you. And there's acceptance, and there's empathy, and there's patience, and there's curiosity, and there's gratitude. So love also has a lot of different faces. From that place, we're a different person. We're a different leader. Now, we all slip into both, but it's being able to recognize when I'm coming from fear, there will be for me and others some collateral damage, because where I'm starting from, my base, where I'm starting from, whatever I'm doing, that's the resonance that I'm sending out. If I'm coming from love, it has a different resonance. And I've got a number of clients, well, you know, around the world, they're all thinking about transformation. We need to change ourselves. We need to be more innovative, reinvent our space. The state of love, curiosity, and patience, and connection and collaboration, that's the source of the transformation. You know, the fascinating thing that I'll stop talking is that we are doing some work with cross clients around the globe to look at what capacities of leaders are. We've always measured what kind of capacities leaders need to bring to be effective in the C-suite. We're now looking at a subset, which is what is needed from leaders that are trying to transform themselves and their organizations and taking people with them. And three things come in. One is, you know, do they have the foresight and the capacity to see something different? That's important. Second is, do they have the courage to change? So change themselves, the boldness to change things around them. And the third is, can they take people with them? And we're having a look at what are the biggest drivers within that? And the big surprise for me is the central capacity to transform, to lead transformation, the most important, is empathy. I expected mental agility, growth minds, any of those. It's empathy. And I was thinking about Satya Nadella, who years ago, when he was started transforming Microsoft, and the first thing that came out of his mouth was extreme empathy. Now, either he's lucky or he's really good, because he went right to the first capacity, which is a deep, deep manifestation of love, of the state I'm talking about in the post.
Yeah, that resonates so deeply. And thank you for bringing the spirit of John Clayton into this conversation, who now kind of, I imagine him sitting with us I never had the privilege of meeting him, but I know he meant so much to you. And I do recall you must have shared years ago how he discovered this wonderful book, Love is Letting Go of Fear. And then he read and said, oh God, I can see it now. I can see it. So I'm inviting everybody on this podcast to have a look at this wonderful book. And a dear friend, to your point, said recently to me, your frequency is your gift. That's what you bring. And that frequency is shifting. And maybe, how do you, I'm not always in that space. How do you yourself notice currently I'm rather, and I know these are just labels, right? But currently I'm connected more with fear. How does that show up in yourself? How do you become aware of that?
Yeah, we all have our own unique expression of fear, probably also of love. So for me, I will recognize it first in the feeling I have. I will have a charge to myself. There's an energy to it. We live in a universe where actually every single thing is just energy. Everything. And, you know, that's why your book resonates so much. Literally, you know, matter is just potential energy. That's all there is. So it's recognizing that energy first and foremost. And I can feel it in myself. I think different people hold it in different places within themselves. Mine is right here, right in the sort of center.
And you're pointing to a heart.
Near my heart. Yeah. So I can feel that. And that's just a message to me. Oh, Dustin, you're a little bit off this morning, or you're a little bit off at this moment. So that there's a feeling component to it. And then my unique expertise within fear is impatience is how it shows up in me, and judgmental. I can be very judgmental. They ought to, they don't get it, whatever else. So that's sort of what I would call an unhealthy normal. It's so normal to me that I'm good at it, and I could start doing it without noticing it if I'm not paying attention. Very rarely, but it does come out. It could be frustration or even anger. I would notice that. That would surprise me. I'd go, wow, I'm angry. So that would be easier to identify. Well, but that's basically the manifestation for me. And whether people are aware of it or not, they are picking it up. And that will impact the interaction between me and the people I work with.
And thank you for sharing that and allowing that to be shared. And I hear in that the reflection of I'm getting to know myself, you know, over the years, like, oh, that's me in that state. And it's precious to know that with a little wink at your eye, like, all right, oh, probably humor is the first step out of it. And I'd love to turn to the other side as well. Let's just stay with fear for a moment. If we frame fear not as a problem, but just for a moment, simply as one other voice in the room, what's its rightful place in leadership?
So the danger, you're absolutely right to ask that question, because the danger is you make a right and wrong world, which is love states are good, fear states are bad, banish the fear states. First of all, it's normal as a human being to be in that state. So it happens. So is love states. So you're not making it a right and wrong. What I think is anything that's coming through is a form of intelligence. It's information. It's a message. So when we're in a fear state, it's probably telling you something useful, something you maybe need to know, something you care about has been violated, or somebody's done something that is out of sync with a value set you thought you shared. It is giving you information. So it's not a bad thing, but for us to find our way forward with whatever that information is, it is about shifting to a healthier state, because that's where our creativity, the possibilities, the compassion, that's where that shows up. So you can take that information, and then when you act on it, act from that love state, and you will have a better impact, both on yourself, because you won't do damage to yourself, but also on others. So not good or bad, it's part of the equation, but when you notice it, if you act from it, it's going to have there will be consequences. That's just the way it goes.
This
If you can
is,
notice it and then shift yourself and act, then that's different.
So it really starts with, well, first of all, not labeling this, although it might be uncomfortable, it's not a nice feeling to be in. But like, okay, whatever it is, nature would not have invented it if it wasn't necessary. It's some kind of information. I think I'm still learning this over life. You know, the other day, I was with a client and I noticed something. And that night, I just could not sleep. You know, I was moving from one side to the other. But next morning, I was thinking, okay, there's something that your body wants to tell you. What is it wants to say? And a clarity came up about what we actually wanted to talk about. And it puzzled me when that conversation happened. I talked with my client. She said, "How did you know?" I said, "I don't know. This thing here." It wasn't up in my head, but I'm trying to learn, you know, how to listen to that a little bit more. And when you just spoke, it reminded me of a recent conversation with, and I think you know her too, with Jennifer Furtz from NBC Camps. And we spoke about, you know, we call it, you know, the human operating system as the sum of our filters and blind spots and autopilot and our sources and blockages of energy. And in that light, you know, she said, it's like love is kind of the source code of that operating system. Empathy is the source code. And she said, connecting with that is probably the toughest way to lead when it comes to decisions. And so once you've noticed, oh, here we go, I'm in that state, what helps you personally to stay close to that innate capacity of empathy and kind of find your way back into a place where you just have more access to who you are?
So there's a few things. It's interesting. She said that it's a tough place to lead from. There's some truth in that. And that it's just, if I'm feeling impatient, frustrated, and I just dictate what we're going to do and how we're going to do it, that is, you get something done. You're going to get some messaging back in the system. It's easier in the moment, probably. Has some pain coming your way in the future. The other thing is that any living organism, we are one, more of you is dedicated to fear than to love. So then the reason for that is survival. From when we were a single-celled organism, sensing the environment around us, to when we got a little bit more complex, to who we are today, the fear system is telling you, is there danger? And that is something going to eat me. Am I going to end up dead? That other system, that open system, is actually looking outward, and it's about opportunity. And in the simplest form for smaller creatures is there food or an opportunity to procreate? So those are the sort of the reaching out into the world. They're needed for sustenance and continuity. But you can't do that if you're dead. So the fear system has to be a little bit stronger. It has to keep you alive in order to reach out. So I think it is a little stronger for us, and just recognizing that and accepting that. So that's a long-winded way to go into the topic. So how do you get yourself back, or how do I get myself back? Because everybody has a different path. And I occasionally write about this. For me, honestly, the simplest thing on earth, breathe. I can notice when I'm off my game, my breathing is shallow. It's different. There's a different field. So, all the studies show even 10 seconds of breathing differently shifts where you are. So, just taking yourself back to, and it actually gets you back to wherever you are, because usually the fear is something out in front of you. Occasionally it's in the moment, but usually it's a future orientation. So bring it back to bring yourself back to where you are by breathing. For me also, it's just spending time with people. I'll be wrestling with something, and I'll leave my office and go talk to the team, find out what they're up to. What did they do at the weekend or whatever, or what are they working on? We have an amazing team. We have amazing people. And it just lightens me up, gets me to a different place, connecting with others. So there's some of it is on my own, which is breathing and slowing down. Others, I just need to go be with others and connect, and that shifts a lot. And then probably the other is to d dive into something I'm just really curious about. Now, I'm lucky that my avocation, my vocation are pretty much the same thing. So I could be diving into something on leadership or culture. But I also love exploring physics. I do like the world of, and I barely understand it, quantum physics, astrophysics, and that world. So, or if I'm far enough down the line, lose myself in something that's nonfiction, that is fiction. I often advise CEOs, because they'll all be reading some things about being a better coach or being a better leader or whatever else. And I'll ask, what are you reading that's not about that? Because I do think losing myself in a story has been one of the ways that I reset really well. And I've noticed with a few leaders I work with, when they picked up whether it's a mystery novel or some sort of other novel, and they give themselves the space to lose themselves in a story, there's a reset.
I have this little calendar here, which my wife offered to me from Paulo Coelho, and it said this morning, "Today I will write in my diary a poem, not something I have to remember." And I can so relate with that. Sometimes when I'm on vacation, it's, "Oh, there's this other leadership book I want to read," and my wife Francesca goes, "When will you switch off? Read something different."
So what do you, I mean, because I those are the things I do. I'm less good at this other one that I've asked a number of clients to do, and they swear by it, is a gratitude journal. I had a client a number of years back and was having some challenges in life, both on the personal front and on the business front, and asked him to start keeping a gratitude journal. And he wasn't keen. I was actually feeling a little nervous about asking him to do it. Did it, and about a month and a half in, we were having a chat, and he said, "This stuff works." Said, "I'm feeling different. I am a different leader. I'm navigating this issue at home differently." So for him, that gratitude journal worked really well. But each person has their own recipe. What do you do to reset?
One thing that's become so clear to me, and that's a journey that started a couple of years ago when I was, I think we were together at a retreat back then, and I had a bad time. I wasn't at my best. And a colleague of ours said, "Boris," he looked at me and said, "It's quite simple. You need to move. Move. Get out of your head. Move. Move your body." That's 15 years ago. And I think now I'm getting into practice. I'm starting my day whenever I can with walking, A, because it's good for my hips, but it takes often 2, 3 minutes, and all of a sudden a thought pops up, an idea pops up. It's so simple. I think I'm starting to integrate this thing here, and I'm pointing to my body as I'm saying that because we're not on video. I think that's one thing. I can so relate to what you said, stopping. And frankly, I need help sometimes. So my wife's room is not too far away from my home office. And sometimes she says, Boris, you need a break. Yeah, you're right. She notices in my tone, and it just needs this interruption. Breathing, yes, absolutely. And I think the coolest thing I've discovered in the last 5 years is coherent breathing, is the realization that when we breathe in, our heart rate goes up, and when we breathe out, our heart rate goes down every time since we're born. And so you can shape your heart rate pattern through your breathing. Now, if it becomes regular, then your heart tells your amygdala, hey, buddy, everything fine down here, relax. Because unfortunately, as you said, our amygdala isn't very good at distinguishing between a real threat, you're actually going to die now, and a threat to my ego, right? Oh, they don't like you. And it's just not good at that. I so often realize, yesterday evening, I was coming home, and my daughter, she was not in a good state. She has to do a presentation today. She was absolutely convinced that she's going to fail big time today. It was 11 o'clock. She was already up. She was in tears. And I said to my wife, can I help? I said, go and speak to her. I said, all right, okay. Who? But yesterday I had the discipline. I said, before I walk into that room, I'll sit here or stand, it doesn't matter. I will breathe in and breathe out regularly in ways I don't know, but that frequency will make a difference. And maybe I just need to take her in my arms. And I don't think in business it's that different. So for me, the breathing part does it. And on gratitude, I'm not sure if I'll do it my entire life, but from a colleague, I just loved his idea. He had a couple of beans in his left pocket of his jeans. I said, what are they? What are they? I said, oh, it's very simple. Every time something happens during the day when I'm thinking, oh, that's beautiful. Oh, that's great. Oh, that's cool. I take one bean and put it into the other pocket. Okay. And then, well, I notice at the end of the day how many they are. And I said, okay, cool. But I said, no, there's one more thing. As I'm doing that, I'm noticing so many more things. My pockets aren't big enough anymore. It's just because energy goes where awareness goes, where attention goes. And so now it goes there. So he isn't writing stuff. He's just putting beans into his pockets.
That's like a living dynamic gratitude journal,
Yeah.
through beans. I love the idea of walking. I did write about that the other day. Because the two hemispheres of our brain communicate better when we're moving, when we're walking, we're upright. And solving the things that we're facing require us to use our whole brain. So it doesn't only get us to a different place in our feeling state. We just get better breakthroughs. So that's a terrific idea for any leader. If you're stuck, move.
Absolutely. And you're it's interesting. I'm not surprised, but you're pointed to science again. You talked about the amygdala, the brain, left, right brain. And before that, you talked about matter, right? And quantum physics. Now, I know that you've always had a deep curiosity about science and the universe, and from quantum mechanics to the force of gravity. I always recall the story you talked about, how to when two galaxies meet. They actually don't, they never touch, but they destroy each other. How does that curiosity about the universe and physics, how has that informed how you look at leadership, at culture? How does that connect? You just made already a few. I just want to pause on that because I know it plays a big role in your life, and I'm just curious, how does the world of physics and the world of leadership connect in your world?
You're right. It is a big curiosity. And my wife and I were talking last night, and it was something around quantum physics. And I was reflecting with her that, don't remember who said it, one of the early fathers of quantum physics said, if you think you understand quantum physics, you don't. Which is good news for me because I am curious about it, but I don't understand it. I don't understand the maths. Same thing on the macro scale. But For me, what it does is I love to run into, when I run into things that are fascinating, that I just go, wow, is that the universe we live in? And things that seem maybe impossible or different than any of my experience, that opens up possibilities in everything else. So in leadership and culture, at the simplest form, it's often a good metaphor. So, when I was talking about the Milky Way and Andromeda, they will collide at some point. And I was using that metaphor in a merger and acquisition situation. I found it fascinating that when they collide, because of the massive spaces between everything within them, very little. Almost no matter runs into other matter. They would just pass through each other. Problem is gravity. So the gravity of each of them will tear the other thing apart, and they'll become something new, but the gravity will have a big impact. So that was metaphorically, when you bring two organizations together, there's all the things you need to line up, systems, process, etc. The determining factor on whether what this thing turns into is culture, organizational culture, the gravity of the organization. And it's invisible, you don't see it, but it's dictating everything. And that's what gravity does within anything, but a galaxy for sure. So it's a good metaphor. But I think beyond metaphor, I was watching something the other day, and the question was, is the universe conscious? And I was thinking, oh, that's a good question. And so I spent some time, actually did go for a walk. And it dawned on me halfway through the walk, that's a really silly question. And the reason is, we don't live in the universe. We're not like a thing living inside of it. We're part of it. We're made of the same stuff. We're just a different manifestation of the universe. We're conscious. Therefore, the universe is conscious. We have direct experience of the universe being conscious, and it's us. So I do believe in the leadership space. When leadership goes awry, and we're seeing a lot of this in the world, is that it's about separateness. It's about, I'm different than you. I know more than you. It's about disconnecting people, maybe even facing people off with one another, both in the macro environment politically, but also in organizations. You get silos and factions, and it's all about separateness. When we're off, and it doesn't work, it does that we do not get to you. Nobody would argue. Well, maybe some people would argue. Right now, the way we're going about running the world is not going to move us more quickly to the answers we need. And it is about division and separateness. That reflection on being part of the fabric rather than being something that is separate and inside of the universe reminded me that it is about connectedness, that we actually are connected. Full stop. Now, scientifically, it's a fact. It's not like you can argue, no, we're not. We are actually virtually empty space and connected. We can see it in our brains, our frontal lobes, they sync when we're together. We are connected. There's no way around that. And that is a factual scientific fact. Living life in that truth that we're connected, we don't do quite as well. And if we're trying to transform an organization, if we're trying to outperform our competition, which all of our clients are trying to do, it is those sorts of efforts are not individual sports. They're team sports. They're about connection. So there's the metaphorical that helps frame a challenge, but then there's the deeper part, which is, if this is the universe we live in and this is how it works, it's about getting individuals and teams and organizations in sync with that. At the center of it is connected, doing it together.
I can so relate to that. It's funnily, only a few days ago, after a walk, I had this idea of asking ChatGPT if you could change one thing, if you were a human being. I said, I'm asking not what you're finding out, I'm asking you, the entity, if you were a human being and you could just shift one thing that would make this a world where people more often feel connected with themselves, each other, the planet. And I said, what would it be? And it said without hesitation, of course, well, it's a computer, a big one, but it said, get rid of the illusion of separateness. That's pretty much at the source of many things. It didn't talk about concrete actions, but because the action stems from that. And I often feel that this illusion of even my thoughts would be private because they happen, inside my head. So, but they don't influence it. If I look at it from a quantum perspective, it's not true. My own presence, the separation between subject and object is an illusion. So the mere fact, even when I'm in a coaching, I'm sitting there before and said, what you're filling your head with, even if I don't say a word, has an impact. I've learned from one lovely teacher. His name is Paul Sonnenfeld, and he said, can you just pause and said, I'm here and available. That's just it. Can you just sit in that sense rather than I'm the solution, I'm the tool, I am the, it's enough. And I've realized again and again how powerful this is, because whatever happens inside me, the quality of my presence is, of course, palpable. So what I'm hearing, what you're saying, is probably a constant reconnecting with that truth, then separating again.
Yeah, and I love the way you say it. You do have to see it. There's a, I don't remember whose quote it is, but we don't see the world as it is. We see the world as we are.
In so many ways. So, actually, speaking about this, I wanted to. I'm so grateful you're open this wide space, right? From practical experience of how we reconnect with our best state to, well, the universe. Well, with all that in mind, you've recently published a book together with Ed Mamfrie, who we both love a lot, and call it Lead Through Anything, which, well, let's be honest, it's a bold title. And you wrote in there, and I quote, we believe that the escalating challenges and crises of the modern era make exceptional leadership truly indispensable. Our lifelong commitment is not only to help create a world better led today, but to offer a roadmap we can entrust to future leaders, including our own children, that will guide them through anything and help build a world better led long into the future. Now, I know this isn't just a polished message and a nice sentence. I know this is your life speaking, and it's a truth you're embodying and you've been carried for a long time. So let me ask you this. When was the seed of this book first planted in you?
So before I go there, I think the world is the most disrupted, challenging world I've seen in my life. This is not the first time this has happened to humanity that we've been in a phase like this. I'm reading a book. It's about Plato in the early days and his interactions with authoritarian rulers and the tactics of authoritarian rulers and how we actually ended accidentally playing into that. Everything that was happening then is a reflection of what's happening now. And we've had phases throughout history where we go separate and the world is dangerous and we're at each other's throats. That is a pattern. The difference today is the speed and the ubiquity or the reach that ideas can reach every corner of the globe at light speed. And at light speed, in an environment where you create over time sort of these social media bubbles. So people are in echo chambers, and so it's the speed and the reach. Supply chains are global, and we have some technology that can cause a lot more damage in terms of how wars happen. So it feels very dangerous just because of that. It is global, but it's been a pattern for us forever. It is something strange about us. Not really that strange. All primates have it. It is also the fear mode we talked about before. But I do think some of the signal spec, I don't, I'm going to betray a few things politically, but I do believe coming together and working together is better. I do believe that. When we went through Brexit here in the UK, that is not a coming together question. That is a separating question. And it signaled to me there's something going on here that I think takes us further away from the solution, not towards the solution. And there's been a ricochet effect of that particular decision. There's, if I look at the elections of different leaders throughout the world, there is a large leaning towards leaders who think narrowly, my country win lose, good, bad. So that innate, you can call it nationalism or whatever you want to call it, but that's sort of the path that I'm seeing at the moment. So those couple of things, and I was on the phone because it probably was a phone call, because I still like to do phone calls, with Ed, my co-author, Ed Manfrey. Said, so here's what I'm seeing. And we just started to talk. And we are slightly different generations. I'm a Gen X, he's a millennial, and we're looking at it from different sides of the globe. He's in California, I'm in the UK, and we're exploring it. And we got to the point where we realized there is a better way. And with, 20 plus years of experience in this space, it's time to speak up. And the title, there's a real watch out when if you're writing a book, writing the title, you are actually going to have to live it. And there's something about you put the title on, you send out the book, you all of a sudden you get experiences that say, oh yeah, let's see if you can lead through anything.
No idea what you're talking about.
Yeah. So yeah, they it world difficult. We do believe the three principles within the book. Create a compass within ourselves that make navigating that world and navigating that world in a positive way, that has a positive impact, is in those three principles. Funny, quick. There's a lot of, you've written your book, and you occasionally go and look at what people say about it, and it's nice when people say that was great, changed my life. Some people say, yeah, it's good. I had one that said, something to the effect that it's good, but I prefer DISC or MBTI. And I thought, well, okay, I think DISC and MBTI are also pretty good. In the first chapter, we say this is not a leadership typology framework. So that might have been missed. It's 100% not where we wanted to go, which is this is not about a type. This is about principles, and principles that will help you guide through life. So it's not a style indicator, because those thriving leaders we looked at, they were all, so if you'd given them one of these other tests, they would all be different. So it's what's underneath that enables them to navigate differently.
So I can so relate to that. I think there are as many versions of your book as there are readers, because we'll all read it differently. There isn't actually a book. Even between you and Ed, it will be two books already in the way you're reading it. So let's take a moment, because in your book you explore that state that you call thriving, sitting at the sweet spot of purpose and vitality and agility. And you describe these, I would call it gateways for energy and flow in people and organization. I think, and I invite everybody to have a look at this. I love the book. What I'm more curious about right now is, How do these principles relate to your own journey? So, what were some doorways, crucible moments, setbacks, reflections, or just gifts you've received that made these principles personal and truly meaningful? You just said, you know, you need to live it, but it also comes from somewhere. It was born somewhere. When you were 12, maybe it wasn't there. So, in other words, what moments stand out along your own thriving journey that are reflected in the book? I know you can't share all of them, but maybe a few.
Yeah, we'll be here for a long time.
You would be here for a very long time. I told you, more than one podcast.
So first, you know, if I take a step back and look at, we have a shared friend in Paul Nakai, who, another lovely man like a John Clayton, who's left an imprint on me and I believe on you in his coaching and his wisdom. Before he started in the space in which we work, he was an engineer, and he was describing his take on thriving. And three principles are purpose, knowing who you are, what you're about, what you want to create in the world, a learning mindset, so constantly learning, curiosity, changing, and then the third is vitality, which is energy and connection. And it's not any one thing. It's the three in concert with each other. It's the confluence of the three. And he was using the metaphor of a rocket. He was saying, Dustin, you know, when a rocket's going up into the air, looks like it's going straight. It's not. It's almost always off course. But it's got a little gyroscope in the front, and it's making constant corrections. Could be feet or could be millimeters, but it's making connections or corrections. So that, and that gets the rocket to where it needs to go. That's what thriving is for me. It's a little gyroscope. And I notice when I'm off track. And then you go to curiosity, go, okay, what's going on here? Sometimes that's just a micro adjustment in a day. I'm off. Okay, I don't want to get too analytical about it. It's just a diagnostic, just test. So what's going on? And usually you'll find that one of these three, purpose, learning mindset, or vitality, is a bit off. And that's why it feels odd or difficult, or you're not seeing something. Then there's bigger circumstances, you call them crucible moments, those moments where it is tough. And the place to go for me is back to, because if I'm going to navigate this tough place, I need to know where I am. So if I look at two big moments in my life, one is, you know, when we were in a phase of getting a business ready to sell it. That was difficult for me because, you know, as part of the leadership, this was something we couldn't share with people. Now, you've worked with me before, and I love being with people, and I want to be authentic and transparent and be connected. And for a year, I was carrying something that I knew and nobody else knew. And I was getting ground down in that year. And when I looked at, look, you know, when I did it, like a self-diagnostic, I do lose sight of purpose, but not very easily. I know why I'm here and what I want to do in the world. Curiosity was there. Learning was there. But where I was feeling disconnected, that vitality piece was off. And I think it impacted unconsciously, it was impacting the team, the performance. So I needed to go back and reflect on how do I regain connectedness and vitality without, I've made a promise, I'm not gonna talk about this one topic. So how do I reconnect?
In a different way.
In a different way, without going down the path, the well-trodden path, which is I'll just share everything and we'll be open and we'll explore it together. In doing that, that made the sort of the last probably 3-4 months up to the sale of the business different. Because because I recognized that wheel was wobbly. I did overplay vitality and connection to get myself back on track. And hopefully that helped the people around me. The other was I moved jobs. I moved from company to company. And wow, the first several months were tough. I was grinding. And again, looking back at it, I realized that purpose was pretty much on track. Vitality felt pretty good. My willingness to learn and grow and see things different was the challenge spot. Because all I could see is where they were doing it wrong. That's not my experience. That's not how it works. This is how it works. This is how we ought to be doing it. I had forgotten the reason I moved was to explore different ground, which is grab hold of things that you don't know or be okay with things that are really, really different. So during that period of time, because it was just such a grind, I did have to refocus heavily on the one that was wobbly, which was growth mindset, the willingness to continue to learn, to be curious, and start to grab hold of the things that were being done that were different than my experience. And first of all, my energy came back, but B, I started to realize that there were different ways of doing the thing I've been doing for 20 something years. Some of them just different, some of them better, some of them less, but there was learning in it. And I don't see my topic of leadership and culture the same way after shifting gears and being willing to go into a new space. I don't know if that answers the question, but that's...
I know. Hopefully it doesn't, because then everything stops. I read the other day, they found it somewhere on a book. I think it was Robert Koch who said, some questions are too good to be spoiled by an answer.
I like that.
And I can, so, you know, you're also pointing to questions to what I'm hearing, it's really just about noticing. And if you have... let's call it a framework for the lack of a better word right now. Here are the 2-3 things I really want to pay attention to. Just check in. How is that going for me right now? That's the starting point. And with awareness comes choice. And this is what you're describing in your book, are areas of awareness in a sense. And I also love, you know, our shared friend, Amy Turner, she reminded me the other day, as she brought this question to the room, there will be a lot of things you know. Can you look for what you don't know? That's much more interesting. But she said that filter, right? Can you deliberately look for that? And all of a sudden it shows up. So maybe to explore that for a moment, from the perspective of thriving and those universal principles of purpose and vitality and agility, what would you say are some essential questions that you wish more leaders would ask themselves, especially when no one is looking?
Mm-hmm. That's a good question. Yeah, so let me think of it. There's a few things that come to mind. This is just what's popping up right now. So, you know, the thriving study, the research, the empirical and experiential evidence shows that thriving leaders outperform on a number of fronts. And that's important, because when leaders outperform, they set a business in a direction. That's good for the people they lead, because it creates jobs and it creates opportunity and learning and everything else. So there is a performance element to this where, you know, you're performing. And by performing, you're creating opportunity for others. So for me, the first question is that I'd want, it's one that I reflect on, which is, what kind of world, what kind of experience, what kind of environment do I want to shape for the people that I work with or that work for me? Because there's a unique period of time where you're in a role of leadership. What do you want to create? And that requires constant reflection because I personally go in and out of either creating something that is just different and special, and sometimes honestly creating something that's pretty much the same as everything else, and noticing when you're doing one or the other. So what do I want to create for others? Second is I don't think this is not factual, but I really think it's really tough to change anything without being willing to change yourself. There are a couple of questions, which is what am I afraid of right now? What am I backing away from? I read this morning something like every breakthrough, every change is on the other side of your fear. What am I backing away from? Because that's probably where the opportunity is, that transformation of self and how you can take yourself to a different place. And walking forward to it. I think in the book, one of the things that we said is fascinating that thriving leaders tend to run towards the fire, not away. Now, that's a bad metaphor because don't run towards fire, but they run towards the challenge and they dive
Towards the
into it.
heat,
And no matter how uncomfortable it is, they're going in because they know there's an opportunity there. Most of us spend a lot of time avoiding discomfort. What is it you fear and moving towards it and the learning in it? So what am I backing away from? The next would be, what am I hiding? I think any other human being on earth knows, I don't know, 20% of us, because 80% of us is happening between our ears. It's never voiced, it's a constant dialogue that's going on in there. Often there's something they go, this is how I am, this is what I think, this is what I believe. I'm scared to share it. There's move towards the things uncomfortable and what am I backing off of? And then what am I not sharing? The leaders you and I work with are amazing. And they're already doing most often an incredible job and under an extreme pressure. But there are parts of them, if they let them out and they shared more of it, they'd have an even bigger impact. Now they'll often be thinking if people thought if they knew this, let's say if they knew I was scared about the future of X, Y, or Z, or I don't know everything about AI and how it's going to impact us, or so I'm busy trying to pretend like I do know. So I'm hiding something. If they shared that, they're thinking I'll lose credibility. More often than not, you actually gain connection and credibility by sharing those things. So those would just be two simple questions I'd ask myself as a leader.
They're simple, and yet so in their simplicity lies the power. I've read a beautiful book called Moving Questions, and her name is Seitz Bakker, and she said, moving questions have no commas. They're not complicated. And sometimes maybe the question, if we ask them to ourselves or in the presence of a companion, it's just becoming, oh God, now that I hear myself saying it, I'm just realizing I am afraid of that. And just noticing myself can often be so freeing, like, oh, and I can breathe again. Here it is. And maybe thank you so much for sharing that, because it could be wonderful transition into maybe the last moments of our conversations. In your book, you quote Warren Bennis saying, becoming a leader is synonymous to becoming yourself. It's precisely, talking about simplicity, right? It's precisely that simple, and it is also that difficult. So if leadership means becoming yourself, who is the self that you are growing into right now?
Well, so first of all, thanks for sharing the quote. It is that if you look at the whole of the book, it is going in that direction that leadership is an inside job. Most things you read will be about leaders and what did they change outside of themselves. So fundamentally, The book is about the change within yourself. You don't even have to proclaim it. It's just the change within yourself. And there, generally, there's more gratitude. There's more happiness. There's more impact. There's more feeling of wholeness, I guess, when you go in that direction. So in a world where you're under pressure and there are good days and bad days and good results and bad results, it does give you more resilience. There's a place within you if you've gone in that direction. So it is going inside. I and almost every client I've worked with would rather do the opposite. Wouldn't it be easy to just talk about ideas? Wouldn't it be easier to conceptually get it or to change it, things outside? Let's change our performance management and let's change our leadership standards or whatever else. That is so comfortable. And I think, you know, yeah, I'd be nice if that actually, if it, you know, if that's all you had to do, because it would be comfortable. Fact is that it isn't all you have to do. So where am I going? You know me. I grew up playing sport. You know, it's a big part of who I am. Spent a lot of years in business. I like winning in business. I like to make sure the organization is doing constantly better than it was before, and winning against the competition. I do have that as part of who I am. There's a competitive spirit, and performance. But there's so many different ways to get there. And so for me, we started the whole thing about love and fear. I do believe that the next chapter for me is, well, I'll use the, it's fascinating. When we first had kids, and I remember our eldest was born and I was driving and I was thinking about a book I was reading that was basically faction, which is historical fiction, I guess, or something like that. But it's a story that captures history, but then there's fictional characters that carry you along the way. And what's fascinating is you go from one chapter to the next and you realize, wait a minute, the character I was fixated on is fading out and a new character is becoming the story. And that's where I was in my life. I realized, okay, the story is him. And then when his brother was born, the story is him. I'm the character that was dominating the story. Now I'm in the story, but there's a new protagonist. There's a new, there are new main characters. I think the same thing's true for me in the workplace. There've been big parts of my career that have been about me and my impact, and what I can do and how I can impact clients and individuals. And there's a transition, which is, I still love that. I love having impact. I'll be honest. But it really isn't about my impact. It's about, can I create an organization where there are dozens, then hundreds, then hopefully eventually thousands of people having that impact on that world? And so my journey is getting over myself, and making sure that my leadership is about creating space for others to find their best selves and to have that impact. It's a different job. And it's not an either or, can do both. But I think I was dominated by the self, and in this transition, it is less self and more, can I create a place for amazing people to go do great things and have a positive impact?
And that's a bold invitation. Many different answers will show up, and maybe an also natural segue coming to the end of our, God, an hour passes so quickly. We don't know who's going to hear this. Well, let's imagine there are many leaders, you know, on their path, being on journeys like you, evolving, reflecting about what their role is. If you could plant one seed, an idea, a shift, a new way of seeing it into the heart of leadership across the world? What would you truly try to make this a world better, lad? What would that seed be?
Gosh, I'm not absolutely sure. Let me take a step back. I was sharing with a client the other day that change, it was about, we were talking about change. I said, being born is pretty traumatic for pretty much everybody involved. So it is a, it's a big, it's joyous and all that, but there's a big trauma involved in it. Dying, for the most part, is pretty easy. You just drift, you disappear. Rebirth in life, that's what change is. It's changing who you are, changing in within life, is probably nearer that birth side, but it's very different in that you do it within a live context. And both you and everyone around you, most everyone around you, have a vested interest in you not changing. Because if you can, we just want to keep things the same. That's the way we're wired. So you're always changing within a system. Leadership is an inside-out job. That is true. Go within yourself. But you're doing it within a system. And the system, part of which is you, will be pulling yourself backward to the things you've done before and the comfort zone. So in thinking about that, what would I would say to leaders and leadership teams, can we, instead of pulling each other back, usually unconsciously, or pointing out where each other are wrong or off track, become each other's champions for change. Become the people that actually, that are committed to supporting the positive change in the people around you, recognizing what's great in them. If you're going to make a positive difference in the world, you're going to do it with others. And as leadership teams, I know you spend a lot of time in leadership teams. They're not always on each other's side. And if we could shift those teams and the impact of those teams, if they could all see themselves as, I'm here to make all these other people better, to actually champion their change, to support their change, to not, you know, to help them not give up on how they're going to grow in positive ways. That would be hugely powerful. I don't know if that's the single element, but right now that's what comes to mind, is commit to helping others with their journey. Their journey is not easy. Your journey is not easy. Instead of judging it, commit to making it easier for them.
Desmond, what a wonderful way of closing this as an opportunity, an invitation, rebirth. I love that term. Somewhere between birth and death. It can be applied to organizations, to teams, to ourselves, to our families. I'll take that onto my journey. I was right. This wouldn't be whole if you hadn't been here. What a gift. Thank you for these, you know, a little bit more than an hour reflecting, dancing together from the universe to the boardroom. Thank you so much, Dustin.
Thank you. It was great. Enjoyed it.
Me too. Take care.